Welcome to the TEFL Training Institute podcast, the bite-sized TEFL podcast for teachers, trainers, and managers. Hello, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. And today we've got two guests. Matt, our regular guest.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Matt. And we have Karen. Karen Xie.
What do you do, Karen? What's your job now? It's changed since last time.
Yeah, so I'm now the academic manager for Trinity China. My job's like helping teachers preparing their students for Trinity JESSE exams and also expanding Trinity TESOL courses to teachers in mainland China.
Great. Okay, welcome.
So today I thought we could talk about questions, but I thought it would be interesting today to look at different aspects of questions or different ways that we can look at questions using Bloom's taxonomy, open and close, and a whole lot of other things.
So we've got three questions about questions. The first one is questions teachers can ask, and the second?
The second one is questions trainers ask.
And the third one?
Questions we can ask ourselves to reflect.
You know, we've all are teachers, war teachers, right? And we're trained teachers. So what do you think teachers usually feel struggle with asking questions in the classroom?
I got curious in that question, and that's why I used it as my section one for my Deep TESOL portfolio topic. Well, I guess we ask so many questions, but we were not necessarily always aware of why we ask the questions we ask and what we were trying to get from the students.
So did you find anything in your research?
Yeah, the main thing was teachers rarely paid attention to the proportion of display questions and referential questions they ask.
So before we jump into like what kind of things that teachers ask, what are some different types of questions or ways of categorizing teacher questions?
The simple way of categorizing questions like open-ended questions.
Okay.
And yes-no questions. And there's also like display questions and referential questions.
Great. So I think most people can get closed and open questions. But what's a referential question or a display question?
A display question is when the person or the teacher knows the answer or the other people also know the answer to the question. For example, when you hold a pen, so everybody can see the pen, you ask, what color is this pen? And the referential question, on the other hand, would be like when you invite opinions or ask questions that there's no definite answer to.
Yeah, I think the display question is quite similar to experience questions because everybody can see it, can feel it.
So I suppose that's good for checking some kind of meaning, right? Because you can be sure that however the students answer it, they, you know that they've either got the concept or not. Mm-hmm.
For example, can you find a microphone in this room?
But I can imagine that must be a problem, right? Like if teachers ask too many display questions, there's no real genuine or natural communication, right? Like you would never normally ask someone, what color is this pen, right? Because you can see the color of the pen by looking at it.
Yeah, there's no need to ask a question.
Well, it's okay to ask questions about the function of language sometimes and like what it means. And how, like in that, and I guess we're talking about like vocabulary here, but with grammar as well, right? Asking questions, comparing two different grammar structures. It's not necessarily something you would do in day-to-day conversation, but I think it's a kind of question that's really essential in the classroom.
It's almost like a concept checking question you're talking about then.
I think a well-formed concept checking question can drive a student's understanding of this grammar point or vocabulary point forward. It's not just what do you know about it already, but I think you can ask, like for example, after reading an article, I think it's really useful to ask, why did the author choose to say it this way? What other ways could he have said it? What other grammar could he have used? How does that change the meaning? Mm-hmm. And I think these can not just display that you understand what the grammar is, but it can actually push forward your understanding of grammar.
It seems like you give the students an opportunity to go further and then to make connections between the language and also how the language can be applied in real communication.
Yeah.
For example, where can you use it and then why people use it instead of using that.
Yeah. Or like getting students to analyze and evaluate the language that they've heard or they just used.
So it sounds like now we're heading on to Bloom's taxonomy as a way of looking at questions, right? Where the lowest levels of Bloom's taxonomy might be, what's this? Or what did you read? Or what did this person do in the passage? Whereas higher up, it would be like, why did they behave this way? Why did they make this decision? And then maybe at the top might be, can you rewrite the ending to this story?
Yeah. Did you read something recently, Ross, about reading comprehension questions?
So I have here like a couple of other models for reading comprehension questions. So one's by Diane Freeman. So she splits reading comprehensions into three different areas. So one is questions about the content. Yeah, like what happened in the text? Why did this person do this? And then you get questions about the language. So maybe those are ones like Matt mentioned earlier, like what tense did the person use here? Why did they use that? What does that show? And then the final one is she calls them affect questions. So it's like personal response, like what do you think of this character? Why do you think they did this thing? Or evaluation, like what did the author mean by this?
Or what stance does the author take? And yeah, how does it represent the values of society and where's the author's place in this?
One thing that I didn't know or wasn't aware before I did my research, but I did come to realize, was that the follow-up questions really made a difference. For example, the first few kinds of questions that you mentioned, most teachers would ask them. But what really made a difference was the later ones, because not many teachers ask them.
Interesting, because I'd always thought before with these things that like going to those higher levels of Bloom's taxonomy, it's like it's a nice to have, but maybe it's not really helping people learn language. But the more I've read about this recently, the more I'm beginning to believe or understand that the deeper you get students to process and think about, the more they're able to remember and recall ideas later on. So really sort of pushing people to think about things in a much deeper way actually helps them with language acquisition.
So recently I read Edward de Bono's book, Teach Our Child to Think. So what he mentioned is about there are different type of practice and you can help the children to improve their thinking skills. But there are like four different types of item, and there are like fun items, which means the questions should be imaginative and it can be a little bit crazy. What would happen if we all had third arm and they have like a remote item and beyond their experience and needs? For example, what factors would you consider when you're choosing a place to set up a new restaurant, right? For children, and probably they've seen restaurants, but they don't know what is the process to set up the restaurant. And then the third one is called backyard item, which means, for example, what do you think your school policies, right? Do you agree with it or you disagree with it? It's kind of related to their life. And the last one is called heavy at item. So it's serious and also directly relevant to their life. Like, how can you make more friends in your neighborhood? These questions, of course, not always we use in the classroom, but also I think teacher and parents should help their children to be able to improve their thinking skills.
Let's talk a bit about questions that trainers ask them. I know Karen, you and I and Matt, we talked before about almost this danger of trainers asking questions to trainees and doing that classic thing of, hey, I'm trying to elicit an idea.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is?
So yeah, years ago when I was a teacher, I had a trainer who was talking about board work. And she asked us something about, like, let's say word stress. And she was saying, so what's a way we can symbolize word stress on the board? And somebody was like, you could draw a circle over the stress syllable. And the trainer went, Yeah, I guess. And then she kept going at it. And then somebody else was like, you could underline the stress syllable. Yeah. And then finally we got to the point of just saying, like, what is it? And she was like, guys, we have different colored markers on the board. And then we're like, oh, okay, I get it. And she was like, so what can you do?
It's almost like reading my mind or guess what I'm thinking rather than like what we can do or different options.
And at least in that example, none of those other options were any less valid than her one. And I think the thing is that people will be more likely to use their idea than something that someone else spoon-feeds you.
Russ, when you observed my training before, or maybe when you observed my lessons, at the very beginning, the first question you asked was, what kind of feedback do you want? Do you want to do like a coaching reflection thing? Do you want to just give you a few points to work on? Or do you want? And I thought that was pretty cool, you know? But I think we ended up doing kind of a reflection thing. And then we finished that and I said, okay, what's your advice?
That's because maybe you both preferred that coaching style. We were so used to a certain way of doing things in like training and feedback. And we just assume that people would prefer similar ways. We are just how we trained.
I think, like Matt mentioned, I think it's great if the trainer can give the options to the trainee or what type of feedback you prefer. It also doesn't mean that's always true. If I say I prefer direct feedback, it doesn't mean this person can really accept and to be reflective on those direct feedback or take actions. So I think there's always like a balance.
I don't think I do that anymore. I don't think I give people that choice because I think what I found was that people just say, yeah, just tell me what you think. I think that's sort of like the default setting. But I often find that after you tell someone, okay, these are the three things I would change, that they're like, well, that was a bit direct. It's like, well, that's what you thought you wanted, but maybe that's not what you actually wanted. And in that situation now, I usually go, what do you want to talk about the lesson or about the training? Like, tell me about it. And then usually you find if the thing that the person first starts speaking about is the thing that they're most interested in. And then you can start kind of exploring that area.
But I think it's also a good opportunity if they felt that they did something really well and we can still explore, okay, why do you think it went really well?
We were talking last night, you drew a distinction between two kinds of questioning. You're saying, oh, that's eliciting. It's not really, what was it?
Right. So I think, Karen, your example. Yeah, your example was like, well, I asked these questions so people can self-discover. But I think this is there's a difference between self-discovery and eliciting. If you ask a lot of questions to elicit, that's like, I have an idea and I want to quote unquote coach you to get to this idea that I'm already thinking of. And I think that's the thing that people find annoying. Whereas self-discovery is different because that's, for me at least, that's you're discovering your own answer to the question. And I don't really care if the answer that you get is the same answer as I've thought of or not.
And so often I think what every trainee hates is when the trainer is eliciting from them and they try to disguise it as self-discovery.
So we talked about teachers asking questions and trainers asking questions. I think that probably all of us have found when you get to a certain point in your career, there isn't anyone asking you questions and coaching you, right? It kind of comes down to yourself to be in charge of your own professional development. What questions do you guys ask yourselves to help yourselves improve?
I think I always try to ask myself, okay, I read something or I heard something, or just find out a new concept. And how can I make it relevant to my working context?
Yeah, and remember, Tracy, I was showing you the Chinese quote from my friend. The three questions, she said, whenever you talk to people, ask yourself, one, would people be able to understand what you say? Two, the things that people and the things that you mention, would people know about them? And the third would people be interested in what you're talking about and why? So I think those were three really lovely questions for us to ask ourselves.
The other kind of really useful question that I find I ask myself is, this is not so much as a trainer, but as a manager, when things go wrong and you often think like, wow, this, you know, it's because this person messed this thing up. And so often that is the case. But the most powerful thing that I find for helping me learn is stepping back and thinking, well, I can't change how my boss behaves, or I can't change how this person in this other department behaves. So those things were out of my control. And even though this was 99% this other person's fault, what's the thing that I could have done differently in this situation? And I find that's a really, really useful thing. And also for people that work for you going, okay, so this wasn't your fault, but what's the thing that you could have done differently to prevent that from happening? And then all of those like annoying situations, all of those problems, when they arise, you can still turn them into some opportunity to learn something. Matt and Karen, thanks very much for coming on again.
Thanks for having me, Ross.
You're very welcome, Matt. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
For more podcasts, videos, and blogs, visit our website, www.tefltraininginstitute.com.
If you've got a question or a topic you'd like us to discuss, leave us a comment.
And if you want to keep up to date with our latest content, add us on WeChat at TEFL Training Institute.
If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate us on iTunes.